This is the Saddled Stallion podcast, where men are equipped and encouraged to understand their wiring, clarify their mission, and find purpose along the path to its fulfillment. I'm your host, Chad Kanier, and I'm stoked to have you here. Let's roll. We are back. We are back.
Do you do that alone? Like when I'm not here? Those type of things?
No. Because there's no one to entertain when I'm alone. I don't look in the mirror and say, we are back. But I like to do it here because I know you're going to say something to embarrass me.
Hurtful but true?
I don't really get embarrassed, though. I don't have the shame thing like you. I don't think you have a shame thing. I just don't think I embarrass very easily.
No, it's an awkwardness.
It makes me think of that Friends episode.
It goes back to my fleeing.
I just don't shame very easy.
Oh, yeah.
And he just shames her on the plane. It goes back to what?
What I was mentioning in the last episode about fleeing. Like, if I am awkward, I will just leave.
Yeah, you literally, like, whenever we're in a car.
Oh.
And there's some
sort
of. Your
road rage comes out?
I do not have road rage. This is very. I'm like, I do not have road rage. Wow, it didn't go well. I do not have road rage. We have encountered some psychopaths on the road. Remember that guy who I thought was just appreciating my moves on the highway, following me very closely, and then he came up in the next lane and was really angry and was threatening with his car like we were in a freaking Sylvester Stallone movie and yelling at me and like literally moving his truck like he was going to barrel into our family, and I just didn't even roll the window down, and I'm glad I have tinted windows. That was not my fault. That guy's a psycho. He needs to be committed. Please nod. Thank you. Because what you said in that moment in the car really made me angry. Then I did have road rage against you. Anyway, if we're in those situations, Danny literally slithers down into the seat and tries to make herself a little ladybug that is just, like, you just want to exit the situation. Any awkward situation, you just leave.
I'm a fleer.
And you put your head down.
Oh, yeah. If I have a hat,
like you
today,
literally I'll have just... a hat down and you're just out of there. And I'm like, there goes my partner. But I do put us in some awkward situations sometimes. I'm pretty controversial in some because I want to stand for justice. You know, I just hate seeing people do the wrong thing and get away with it. It makes me sad. I think more people need to step up. What are your thoughts?
I think this is a long introduction.
Very long introduction. Today, we're going to get into... some pretty nitty-gritty stuff, actually. So we alluded to some things in the last episode that we did together around, you know, some of the difficulties that we've gone through as a married couple, some of the things we've learned about ourselves in the marriage, and a lot of the growth that came out of those things for us. But we want to get a little bit more specific around an issue that we've actually learned is a hugely common issue with young couples.
Yep. And it's a great topic to jump right into.
After my icebreaker question, what traits in the kids do you see that are from me that you like?
Deacon, ear size.
Danny, the ear size
Mila,
thing, you got to let it
love
go.
Love of life. Like, she's just such so a free spirit. She's so full of life.
You got to channel
She doesn't
that.
Have shame either, which is, I'm happy
I wish
for
she
her.
Had a little bit more shame. Some of the hygiene Sometimes things are considerable.
But, you know, as a woman or that she'll eventually grow into, I'm glad she's not like
I
uber
know,
self-conscious.
So
she
tough.
Just kind of like.
And she sneezes into a Kleenex and hands it to me, and I grab it, and there's literally like snot on my hand. It's disgusting.
She's just very
she's
much
like, whatever,
herself,
Dad.
And I hope she never like loses that. And you, even if you piss people off, you're very much yourself. So I appreciate that.
Thanks, babe. I want to be authentic.
Cal. Body type, like physique.
God, you're really into the body stuff.
Like, he just looks
so
like
me.
A mini you.
He is me, but he's got that hair, the flowing locks.
He's got the red hair of
it's
fury.
It's not that red. It's not, it's like strawberry blonde, and it's funny, it's growing really weird. It only like kind of grows in the back, so he almost looks like he's like a balding older dude, but we won't cut it because we want it to be long. Oh man, I love our kids. I would say, Deacon, so it's crazy. So you think your wife's wired a certain way and you think that's just like kind of the way she is, but maybe over the years she's turned into that person. And there is a lot of that stuff. You know, we've talked about that already. Like our life circumstances definitely shape our behaviors. But there's also some stuff that's genetic and just hardwired in. Seeing Deacon and the way his brain works, super conscientious, very kind of a worrier. but he has every detail locked down. I mean, the kid's 6 years old and he holds me accountable in the morning of the 7 things we need to do before we go to school.
Yeah, like he's been making his bed since he was, what, 3? And no one even taught him that.
He might even have a little bit of OCD.
Yeah, like his hospital corners if we're not are careful. Fresh on his bed.
He's absolutely the most organized kid ever. And just a lot of those behaviors that are like, oh my God, that is your mom. You're just wired like that, you know? Even kind of his worry about medical stuff. You know, he's the first one to be like, am I sick? Like, am I really sick? I'm like, dude, you have, you know, allergies. You're fine, dude. This is no big deal. I didn't think of one for each kid. Mila, I will go just like physical. Her hair is obviously from you. I always wanted a little curly haired girl. I'm so blessed. Thank you for her little hair and her brown eyes. I mean, all the kids have these really brown eyes. And we joke that I'm the only one with any color in my eyes. Like I have green eyes or whatever. But when the whole family's looking at me, it's like there's like a possum family looking at me like, what do we do, Dad? And it just cracks me up. There's like 2, 4, 6, 8 eyes that are just on me. And then Cal, I don't know. He's so young and he's a lot of me, honestly. He's like a boy Mila. He's a little Bam Bam. I mean, Deacon is like pristine. We call him the mannequin boy sometimes because his body's so sleek and clean. He is like 1% body fat. And Cal is just like a meatsicle. He just looks a lot like me. Just got like a big butt. And I just love that kid. He's so goofy. Anyway, softened it up a little bit, but we're going to go real hard at this topic, which is a really important topic. How do you navigate like the family situation, the in-laws specifically situation? Well, I guess, and the
family
siblings.
Of
yeah, family of origin.
Which I when never you, even knew was a term.
I know. I even now, they're probably like, God, what is this weird technical term? Your family, your original family, the people you grew up with. But that's a great actual starter to this conversation. But how do you define family? What is family once you get married? But how do you deal with that dynamic when you get married? And, you know, what shift do you have to go through? I'm going to speak primarily to men, right? Because that's the only vantage point I can really speak from. How do you view your family? How do you need to start viewing your family of origin a little bit differently when you make a lifelong commitment? Well, I believe an internal commitment to your wife.
In a respectful way.
Which is, it's so hard because, so long story short, when you get married, your new family is created. Whether you're there kids or not, your new family that is yours to lead and protect is you and your wife. Not a lot of people understand or believe that because your whole life, your definition of family has been the family you were born into and raised alongside, etc. And it's a huge mental shift. And guys, it takes a few years to actually wire your brain to actually consider your primary family is now you and your wife. It is no longer your family of origin. They are secondary. That is a huge, right there. That could be, you could do a whole podcast on just that. That's a huge shift. That was a drastic shift for me. First few times I heard that, I was like, BS, I love my family. Why wouldn't they be? No, Danny's my wife, but I have this family, you know? So background, like I was raised in a very tight, close-knit, very highly communicative, as you can imagine, family. Boisterous, passionate. We had a lot of fun, and I came from an enmeshed family, which I learned in counseling what that means when we started having some issues. There's really no secrets with my family. There's no boundaries with my family. If someone knows it, the whole family knows it, which growing up is just like, yeah, you know, you can call that transparency. You can call that, you know, we're all kind of in the soup of like the Canyer family, and we, you know, we love each other, and why wouldn't we share everything? But as you grow into adulthood and you have this spouse who is now your primary responsibility, certain boundaries have to be established to protect your new marriage, especially a new marriage that is just getting off the ground.
Yeah, and I remember one of the counselors says it's just hard, like, then untangling all of that.
Yeah.
Like, it can be great as a family and as a kid and growing up and stuff, but when you have somebody new who's like, oh, I want to do something differently, when you try to pull back on that one piece of yarn and it's for 20 years been very much so part of the larger ball of yarn, it's just harder to pull that back out.
Yeah. And then guess who's blamed for that change? The newcomer. the spouse, because logic would have it that, hey, nothing was like this. There were no boundaries before that person was in the picture. And so healthy parents will see that they're not losing their son or daughter. Their son or daughter is becoming a man and a woman with other responsibilities, with other relationships that are also precious, and they're growing other priorities. And they are growing into who they really are to become. And they should respect those boundaries. We are learning that that is very, very rare, because there's a fear of loss there. There's a fear of loss of connection to my daughter or son. I'm losing them to their new spouse.
Yeah, losing them like physically, losing their input or like influence, kind of
availability.
Yeah, kind of anything. Yeah. Or just his understanding or her understanding that like the way we do it might change. I mean, I can imagine how that would be daunting. Like, our family has done this for so many years, and then now all of a sudden it's changing. Like,
absolutely. There's traditions.
We always talk about how we have to prepare ourselves preemptively because our kids will in fact have to do the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I hear the expression, hey, you're not just marrying them, you're marrying their family. And I hate that expression. BS. It's not accurate. You are marrying them. And yes, of course, we've already talked about it. Their history is a big part of them. But you are not married to that family. Nowhere in the Bible does it say you're marrying someone's family. Your two souls are united in the bond of marriage. So God doesn't even obligate us to marry each other's families, because he knows how messed up families are. And he knows how messed up people are. I think one person being connected to them for eternity, I think that's enough. I don't need to add the crazy sister and the crazy brother.
Yeah, and all of that to say doesn't mean that you don't like respect it and understand how your spouse was, they were a big part of your spouse's life.
And I honestly feel that the best way to handle a new married couple is to just give them space. I really do, because if you're too close and you're in a position to give feedback to the new couple, they're not even strong enough to like receive it. They need to almost like figure some things out themselves. And they're going to do things, even if they're setting the healthy boundaries, they're probably going to do it the wrong way. I know I did, because I didn't know what, I had never set a boundary in my life. I just left situations that were uncomfortable. I was like, peace. I don't like how I feel right now. Later, I'm going to go date a different girl. I'm going to go get a different job. But you know, when you're married to someone and you're committed, you're not going anywhere. And you can't exactly just cut your family out of your life completely out the gate.
And what we talked about last time, though, like a lot of the things that you just thought were normal or I just thought were normal, we didn't even think about having to set a boundary for. You know what I mean? Like, this is just how my family handles conflict. It would take like a spouse coming in and being like, maybe not the best way to do it. Or at least like, I don't want to be a part of how they handle conflict. Then you actually have to set a boundary at something that you were just thinking was normal for a big chunk of your life.
And I would say that just because dynamics in a family are quote unquote normal or repeated or the standard, that does not make them healthy. That does not mean they're healthy just because they are quote unquote working. I mean, it could be a highly dysfunctional functioning family. And so sometimes you need an external perspective to say, this is not highly functioning. I don't like the way I feel right now. You might be used to feeling like this way because you just grew up in this home, but this is not, I don't feel healthy. I don't feel loved. They can call it whatever they want. This is not healthy.
Yeah. And it's just crappy and hard. And it's so the hard. Whole situation is always difficult. I mean, what we know now versus what we knew 7 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
I don't think our decision, the boundaries that we set up, would be the same. I don't think you and I would go back on being like, we have to have some boundaries or we don't like these certain behaviors.
I'm pretty solid on the boundaries.
But of course, having more empathy for the other people in the scenario didn't have that at the beginning.
No. I was so focused on defending us.
Yeah.
And protecting us.
It's just a whole lot. And it's, I just so can't believe how common it is.
I know. It's so good for, and I was recently talking to a girl in my master's program who's going through some of this as she's entering marriage season with her fiance, and she even had to deal with some of this stuff during dating. But when we get married, something happens, like a lot of stuff comes to the surface for our families. A lot of fears, a lot of control. It's all rooted in care and love, but it can manifest in disgusting, like despicable ways in the name of love. And it's like, this isn't love. This doesn't feel like love. This feels like control. This feels like fear. And so, God, it's not an easy situation for the parents to be in either, but they have to ask themselves, do I love my son or my daughter the way I understand them now and the way our lives work right now and them fitting into my world and me fitting into the, essentially, do I love them under the current constructs or do I just love them? And because love is a decision, right? And yeah, and relationships have to evolve, right? Like I'll never have the same relationship with my dad ever again than we did before our marriage. But you know what? Hopefully he respects me as a man more now because I've made my choice. My priority is my marriage and my family. My priority is not necessarily making everyone happy.
Yeah, I would say the hope, though, too, is that it could eventually get to a place where it is better but different than it was before.
I hope and pray, you know, and I don't have a lot of faith on that, to be honest. But, and it's heartbreaking. We talk about this all the time. Like, I think I'm in the grief stage. I think there's multiple stages of grief. There's bargaining where it's like, if I just would have done this differently, and I did that for years.
Or if I said this differently.
If I just would have said that differently, let me try again. Let me say it with love. Let me say it with this word. Let me say it with less words. Let me say it with more words. Let me say it with pictures. Maybe if I put an emoji in there. No. What I'm saying simply does not want to be heard. And, you know, it's really defeating. I think I'm out of the bargaining stage on that with my family. What do you think? I think there's bargaining and then there's, I can't remember what the next one is, but it's essentially you're getting to a point of, you're getting closer to acceptance where you're like, I can't change them.
You can't make people want to have a conversation specifically or like want to talk about hard things. I mean, I grew up in a similar situation with my dad. Like, we could never get to the point where we were going to actually have a conversation about like what happened and like what I believe I saw and experienced and all of that. I think there's a huge term now, like it's called gaslighting or something, and I probably don't even fully understand what it all means, but it's essentially being like, I know what I saw, I know what I experienced. It might not have been in your intention or you might have seen it differently, but that's not going to change the fact that like I saw this and you just don't want to talk about it because it probably brings something up in you that you want to avoid.
Shame.
Or you're ashamed, and that's sad. Because yeah, it's like, I will love you through it, but I just want to be able to talk about it.
Well, I think the gaslighting, is it gas lamping? Gaslighting?
I don't even, I think that might even not be the right
no,
term.
No, it's not. Well, where the gaslighting comes into that scenario is you will have a 5-minute conversation with him over coffee about the Washington Nationals.
Redskins,
sorry.
Commanders.
Hey, you can't say, you're racist now for saying Redskins. Commanders. Take command. Come on now. The team. Washington football team. No, you'll have a 5 minutes conversation about that, but then you'll say, okay, I want to get real about what happened when you cheated on mom. And then he would say, and kind of call you dramatic and blow it up, but blame you for that. I think that's gaslighting.
Yeah.
Where it's like, wait, no. I just want to talk about the truth and I want to reconcile on
and
the
not
truth.
Be made to feel guilty about like talking about what's serious.
This is what's so important, is that we are only responsible for what comes out of our mouth and the actions that we take. And we can apologize and we can try and we can say, man, I want to get better. I should have said that in a different way. I love you. I'm figuring this thing out. We are not responsible for the actions of other people.
Or their lack of action.
Or their lack of change. Or their lack of true, humble love and changing their approach and reconsidering their approach, etc.
Yeah, and I think that was the most, like, just sad thing with my dad, just because, like, our time was cut short. But, like, it wasn't that I didn't want a relationship, but it had to be built on, like, a foundation of, like, truth. Otherwise, you're just doing what we've heard so many other families do, where it's just, you just show up for Christmas. It doesn't matter if at Thanksgiving, like, people drank too much and said things that were out of line and never apologized. You just like show up. And I feel like that is almost mainstream these days to
it
just
is.
Like
because
suffer through it.
Family is, family comes first, right?
Yeah. It's all
so you
those
show up
phrases.
And you go take your licks and you go have the blow up fight with your drunk uncle. And guess what? We're going to do this every year because we're a dysfunctional family. But no one changes.
No, and that's the generational thing that just gets passed down.
It just gets worse and it becomes more and more okay. and you become freaking heathens over the centuries because there's no change. There's
it's just
change.
Chalked up to like, that's just how mom is. Or
oh,
that's
you know,
just
didn't
how
pick
dad
my
is.
Family, you know, yeah. Can't pick the crazy. Yeah. Families are crazy. They don't need to be crazy. And I think it wouldn't matter so much. Like I would go to a shit show Thanksgiving every year and be like, here we go. Like freaking start the lawnmower and let's see how crazy old Hank gets. That's honestly entertaining till I have kids. Because they are not going to have their worldview shaped by that guy's issues, right? Just because he can't own up to it. And I want to go back to what you said about your dad and my family. And anyone who is unwilling to face what they have said, face what they have done, and apologize for it. What I'm learning through lots of counseling and lots of groups on comparable issues and things like that is the reason... There's probably multiple reasons why people don't want to admit. I mean, there's pride, there's all this stuff, but they don't believe that they can fully admit what they said, fully relive that moment, really acknowledge what came out of them and what they did, because they're so deeply ashamed. They know it was so wrong, and they don't trust that they will still be loved. They don't trust that they can be forgiven.
Oh, spot on. I used to even be like, Dad, I just want to talk about this specific thing. And it was just like a no. Or even with your parents, it's like, you said you called me an XYZ, or you said my husband was more of a Christian before he married me. We need to talk about that. We can get through anything, but let's just say we're sorry and then move on.
Mm-hmm. And then that's gaslighting when I say that to them and I say, I want to build a relationship based on reality and trust and reconciliation, a firm foundation. And they go on a long rant about how critical I am and how I have a long record of wrongs that I want to, that, you know, and they're going to use as much scripture as they can to avoid facing, to be being grownups and saying, you know what? You're right. I hurt you and I'm sorry. I want more people. Like we need more people who say they're sorry.
Yeah. I don't know why it's so hard.
It's like, and in this day and age, it's so dangerous because we don't have to say we're sorry anymore. You just don't understand me. You just don't respect me. No. You're a grown up and what you're saying has consequences and you need to apologize for it. I don't care if you feel that way. You are hurting people. You're doing damage.
Or even if you think I'm being oversensitive, or even if you think I'm being XYZ.
Who cares?
If my threshold and I see that hurt me when you said it, what are you giving up by being like, I'm sorry that what I said hurt you?
And to be honest, like we're not talking with my family. We're not talking about fringe hurtful things. Okay. My God, we're talking about all caps in emails. We're talking about paragraphs of hatred. It's not like, hey, that one hurt me. Oh, you're oversensitive. Dude, you told me I broke up your freaking family. You're trying to break up your family. That would hurt anybody. It would hurt a dog. Like it's going to hurt anybody. Maybe not a dog.
But anyway,
you get my point.
It's almost
it's so
one of those
sad
things.
Though. It really is sad, and they're missing out on a real relationship. But I think we're getting away from the
yeah. I was gonna say like, okay, so you have people in your lives that you just can't, that have hurt you, or you just can't fully, you know, have a full relationship with them. What are those steps that we've like learned about forgiveness, amends, reconciliation? And
yeah, and I never knew this. I mean, we know I never knew this.
Neither
people
did I.
Nowadays, they think that the terms are interchangeable. They think that forgiveness, amends, and reconciliation are pretty much all the same thing. So let's share some of the things we've learned about the differences between those terms. So my understanding of forgiveness is this. Forgiveness is saying that person owes me something. They hurt me. There's a debt to pay. I am relieving them of the debt. The only way we can do that, there is a debt that needs to be paid. They owe me $10. They said a hurtful thing that scarred my soul. I'm not just pretending that didn't happen. I'm not saying, I just forgive them. I'm going to let it go. No, I'm saying, hey, God, you take this. I know that you saw that thing. It is not my responsibility to pay them back. For this. So this is not a punisher conversation. There's no like, I'm going to right my wrongs. God, I trust his judgment. I trust that over time he will straighten that situation out in his own loving, perfect way. I just don't know how. I am relieving them of my debt. And it's really more for me. I don't want to be enslaved to the resentment I don't want to hang on to that.
Negative just feelings and energy that when you see their name pop up or anything like
that. I've got to let that go for my freedom, right? And so then my happiness is not contingent upon their apology.
Yeah, it can happen first. Yeah, you might never, like with my dad, we never got to have a conversation where I could say, hey, I love you, I forgive you, we don't see eye to eye, we're probably not going to have like a relationship unless we can talk about, you know, A, B, and C, some big topics, but I forgive you for that, you know what I mean?
Like, but if he heard you say, I forgive you, guess what? He would be like, oh, sweet, we're all good, let's talk about whatever we want, and let's never go back and talk about that subject again, because you forgive me, right?
It's not reconciliation.
It's not reconciliation. Forgiveness is letting go of the debt in our hearts. It doesn't mean that we forget what happened.
No.
The data is the data. Facts are the facts. We serve a just God. He is just. And so that's forgiveness. It is, and by the way, not forgiving someone is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. I love that quote because it's so true. The more we hang on to these things against another person, it just hurts us.
Yeah.
But I really don't feel I've tested, like in my own journey with my family and everything, I've tested that definition of forgiveness. And I truly believe it's accurate because I'm not reconciled with my family. We know that. But I have forgiven my family. And the evidence of that is I don't get all angry about my family anymore. I don't have the frustration. I don't have the anger. I have the sadness. I'm mourning the loss of my family. I miss my family. But I'm only able to feel the emotions like that towards my family, which is really love and like a yearning for them to reconcile because I was able to forgive them. So isn't that cool? Like when I let go of the whole like fire and brimstone, like they're going to pay, God starts to soften my heart towards them. I think it's all part of the road towards reconciliation.
Yeah, and just making sure that you're at least doing your part on that road.
That's right.
And waiting there if and when.
And just waiting and, you know, genuinely being ready for that conversation. What about amends? What's amends?
The next stop on that road. so bad. Two. Such a Chadism to do that.
Super corny. That's so corny. I wouldn't do that.
Amends. So that is settling your end of the debt. So for example, we've had some conflict with your family. Part of that road towards reconciliation is me acknowledging what part I played in it. So specifically owning up to what I could have done better, what I did wrong, and honestly really racking your brain to see like how I could have hurt them. And owning up to it and apologizing without asterisks, any sort of expecting a response from them.
So yeah, like you're rationalizing your behavior. Because exactly. That's not a genuine apology.
So there's no like buts and there's no like, I'm doing this, now your turn. It's just, I'm doing this, no buts. And if you never acknowledge it, if you say, good, I'm finally glad you're coming around, whatever type of situation.
Well, you know, even amends can trigger people where there's just a lot of history and a lot of pain on both sides, you know, but it's so important. And again, it is in relation to them. Like it involves them.
To the other person.
Yeah. But it's also between you and God because you want to show God that I'm willing to own my piece of it too. Like I want to clear my record with you, God. Right.
Yeah. And
like I'm sure there's things I just don't even understand that triggered them.
Exactly. In the heat of the moment.
Yeah, that's right. And there's things that from their past that I just don't have insight into. I might have triggered things in them that I just don't even have insight into. And you can still be really frustrated with someone and apologize for your side of it. It's just part of being a grown up. I mean, to be honest, it's just part of being mature.
Yeah. So whether it's like we wrote letters or just emails or tech, I hate texting about serious topics.
Especially when you have to, they're so long where you click and it becomes a note. I mean, like,
literally,
okay, you know, this like is just
July of 2019,
we need to shorten this. We need to proofread this, you know.
But yeah,
I used to send some long texts too, though. It's so not,
it's just it not doesn't healthy.
Work.
It's just it not doesn't healthy.
Work.
Just like lawyering back and forth. So anyway, amends.
God, that was such a stressful time.
Essentially being like, I'm sorry for thinking ill of you in my heart. Okay.
Yeah. Stuff that they didn't even see.
No, exactly. And no, I didn't lambast you or call you names or whatnot, but didn't think that great about you a good percentage of the time, or, you know, or I did say something mean to you, or I said something mean to you about you to my husband or something like that.
Yeah. And just opening, and what a great opportunity to just be vulnerable and like open about like, hey, there are things that you don't even know about, but I'm going to own those too. Cause it was just at the end of the day, it's wrong.
Or I'm sorry. Or like empathize with them. Like, I'm sorry that this is for the feelings that you must have because you don't have a relationship with your son right now. Like, to be honest, now that we have three kids, there's no bigger pain that I could think of to just not have a relationship with one of our kids, no matter what was said and done.
There's like, also nothing I would ever, there was nothing I wouldn't do to restore.
Lay down on the floor and get run over by
there's cow. Nothing I wouldn't do to restore a relationship with my kids though.
No,
if all I had to do was say, I messed up, I'm really sorry, I'm going to work on changing, to have a relationship with my son, I would do it in a heartbeat.
No, for sure. For sure. But nonetheless, there's definitely like pain there, or for pain sure, of not seeing sure. grandkids or meeting grandkids.
And absolutely. So
just kind of.
Or the fear, you know, all the fears associated with all that.
Yeah. Just acknowledging that they are hurting too. I think that's what's always just really hard for people to just be like, okay, yeah, they called me a bunch of horrible names, but the only reason why someone calls you a bunch of horrible names is because they are dealing with something.
They're hurt. Hurt people really hurt people.
Yeah. Like,
and I think that's something you can pray for is, hey, give me perspective on what they could be feeling. Give me a window. Like, help me understand what they could be feeling, you know?
Yeah. So forgiveness and amends.
Those are different things.
And different things, but also just both things that you take care of kind of on your end of it.
Yeah, like absolutely. Like, those are things that you can control. We haven't even talked about a reconciliation conversation yet. And usually amends is, and this, there is an order to this, right? I think that amends is a good opportunity to test the waters to see if their hearts are ready to make amends on their side as well, and to at least have a conversation on the phone that will be fruitful.
Yeah, test it out. Here,
we don't need to go too far into our story and every little bump along the way, but we've had one or two wins on that road, and we've had some big losses on that road, and ultimately we're just not there yet. But a reconciliation conversation, and we have had a successful one with my sister, mm-hmm. which I'm really grateful for. Reconciliation is, I think of, it's an accounting term. You're reconciling your books, right? So there was a deposit over here. There was a withdrawal over here, and we are settling our accounts. And so amends need to be made on both sides. The reconciliation conversation is making sure you leave that conversation and the records are even. The balances in both accounts are at zero or whatever, however you want to look at it. There is no more debt. Everything has been communicated. All amends have been granted. However, saying I'm sorry isn't always the full solution to bring the accounts back to zero. Sometimes it takes time to re-earn the trust of another person. Sometimes you need a payment plan, if you will, it just came to me, to get back to zero, because you can't pay the full debt in one conversation. The wound is too deep. The pattern is too concerning. The words that you said were just too hurtful to be like, I'm really sorry for that. You need to show them that you are no longer living by that pattern in your life. You won't just continue the offense every month. Yeah. And so you constantly have to come back and have an amends and reconciliation conversation. That's not a healthy relationship, right? So yeah. Reconciliation is really the full kind of the culmination of everything. And so a lot of people don't know these things. And so they just want to restore the good with you. So they'll call it forgiveness. They'll call it, let's make amends. They'll call it, let's go get coffee. Let's go to a game together. And they think they're checking a sufficient box. But if you want a real relationship that's actually sustainable, especially one that can kind of sit alongside your marriage and actually be something that's healthy for your marriage, you've just got to go through these steps. You got to do it right.
And really just not fall into the trap of like, oh, you guys just aren't like forgiving us. It's like, well, that's just such a blanket statement. Like,
yeah, it's really, really frustrating when that, because the work we've done to forgive, the horrendous things that we've had to read and hear and all that, it's just saying that we don't forgive them is just so, it's such an oversimplification. It's so frustrating. But we've talked to a lot of other couples who are dealing with these kind of things. I think that a lot of couples stumble into, you know, I think dysfunction is somewhat accepted in a lot of ways. And so I think a lot of marriages fail because of this, because the mom is just so involved. You know, it often shows face in the wedding planning I'm seeing.
Yeah, maybe just
especially with the mother-in-law, like the mom of the girl's mom. She tries to be super involved in the wedding planning, and that like by the time they're married, everyone just wants to not talk for a year. You know what I mean?
That's definitely one way it can show up. But your mom was like awesome when we were planning our wedding.
Yeah.
So I think that's one way it can start there, or it can start over a first birthday, or it can start over, hey, I know we live really close, but we're only going to come over maybe once a week and maybe not, and maybe 1 week, twice a week. And
I don't really want to have to explain that. I just want to live my life like an adult.
It just pops up in any time that someone's expectation is pushed up against or not met.
Yeah.
Or like I had this idea that we were all going to be like living here and super close and whatever. I had this idea that, wedding stuff are funny, that like my name is going to be on the invitation.
People
like,
are just so weird, prideful about the stupidest stuff. But a few other little tidbits I would share. Don't ever give your family ammunition against a woman that you're going to marry, or even, I mean, if you're serious about someone, don't give them ammunition against her. You don't need to divulge the deepest secrets or troubling details of your relationship or fears or character flaws, because if and when times get tough, those things will be used against your spouse or your significant other or whatever. They will think they're just using that information to protect you because they love you, because you are the priority, but it's very divisive. And what you have to realize when you get married and you actually want to stay married is that protecting your marriage is the number one priority, and no one will care about it like you will. You have to make it a priority.
And no one might understand it like you and your spouse will. And that just has to be okay. I think that was really hard, like probably for you, like we are going to set boundaries and probably six other people aren't going to understand it.
Yeah. And that has to be okay. And early on, I think I cared too much about how that was perceived and like, well, that's not how this other married couple. I remember my older sister said, well, you know, you're setting all these boundaries. Do you see any of the other couples in the family setting similar things? Like, do you think that's necessary? I mean, look at our marriages kind of thing. And you know, every marriage is different and every relationship is different and everyone's past is different and I don't care. It doesn't matter. I think the biggest thing I had to go through is realize that like whatever works and keeps us married and keeps us happy and keeps us growing, that's the right thing. And that's what we're going to do. And do you actually want me to be happily married and grow? Or do you just want me to like kind of have this accessory wife on the side and she better follow your direction that you've set? I'm sorry. Like, that's not what I signed up for. I signed up for a real marriage.
And it's just all about communicating that respectfully. Yeah. Which
you can kind of see why I don't always do a great job of that. But there is a defensiveness there that's just kind of, hey, at the end of the day, I've made my choice. And I will say this for the guys here, like, it makes you better. Like, when you have to figure out what is truly important to you, and you have to make really important, big, momentous calls like, do I listen to my new wife or do I do what my dad is telling me is the right thing to do? That's a very difficult situation to be in.
I remember so many of those conversations.
I mean, it's literally like it's a lose-lose. Yeah. I can't make anyone happy, really. Like, if I tell you to just suck it up and we're going to go to the birthday party, even though they've said horrible things about you, I'm allowing my family to do whatever they want. And we just show up. So we're just pretty much slaves to that situation. But if I tell my family, I'm sorry, based on the way you're communicating with us, I just don't think it's right for us to just come sing kumbaya and everything's great, especially if we're not going to get real about what happened at any point, then I set my whole family off and I'm tearing apart my family and I don't care. I mean, that's a very hard situation for a young guy who's newly married and figuring this whole thing out to be in, but it makes you stronger. Because guess what you have to do in those moments? Can't rely on your wife's logic. She's probably worked up. Can't. You've never been worked
talking
up.
Talking from experience.
You can't obviously just do whatever your daddy and mommy tell you to do and your sisters and brothers tell you to do. You've got to find another source. This is when I started actually reading the Word of God. This is when I started becoming, walking with Jesus. I needed the wisdom.
You were way more open. That's when you first saw like the first counselor.
The first time I went to counseling and realized that I was medicating a lot of that stress with pornography and all this kind of stuff, and bad habits were coming up. We'll get into that, unfortunately, in another episode, which is going to suck, but it'd be awesome at the same time. And that's where we met Rob and Trish. That's where we went to married's couple. And what saved our marriage flat out is going into a room with other couples and letting them and sharing everything we were going through with them and hearing them and getting advice and hearing God's take on the thing through them. That saved our marriage.
Yeah. And just being around people who finally were like willing to share even everything they were going through.
I know.
And not being like, oh, it just like looks great. Like, look at this like family Christmas card. It's like, yeah.
There's so much under the surface that's not being said, you know? And I think that's where Christians we are uniquely positioned to be the salt and light of the world in like actually being real about what is going on and having the dialogue, because people who don't believe and a lot of people who do believe, they are so busy worrying about how they are perceived, and they're so busy trying to make everyone happy and being compliant and look, oh, what does the surface look like, that they can't solve the issues. So they stay stuck in horrible marriages, or they get divorced multiple times because it just isn't working, but they're not doing the right work. They're not getting real.
So just to sum it all up, I like this quote on what reconciliation is, because like I said, it can be very confusing, just hearing inputs from other people and whatnot. So it says, the space for reconciliation opens up when two people acknowledge and are able to discuss their wrongs and are able to be accountable as well as ask for forgiveness for any harm done to them. Reconciliation is wonderful when it happens, but forgiveness must happen too. So it's just all about two people or two parties coming together and honestly being humble enough to hear things that you probably don't want to, and keeping your pride in check and apologizing, even if you don't fully understand it.
Even if you fully don't understand, because it's not about being able to fully understand it. It's about loving them and meeting them there. And what a great road to a real strong, like a durable relationship.
We've seen that
with my sister, where I'm not walking on eggshells around her. Like, we're slowly building. I'm starting to trust Channing to say, hey, that hurt me, and actually get a response that's mature and say, I don't want to hurt you. I'm sorry. Let's figure this out. I mean, I did not know that was even possible. So we have a real relationship now. We're grown-ups now. We can actually work through issues together.
Yeah. And
what
so that's,
a blessing.
That's one amazing outcome of like the whole process, forgiveness, amends, and then reconciliation. But then even going back to like my dad, who obviously isn't here anymore, but like, so I didn't get to the amends and reconciliation part, but
he wouldn't meet you there.
Even just the forgiveness part and the fact that I feel like love towards him and empathy and like all of that tenderness. And I wish we could have had a conversation before. I did not feel that way. If you ask like 20-year-old me,
you were super angry when I met you,
but now like recognizing personality traits that are so him and stuff like that, and just having that tenderness and love towards him is another positive outcome as well. So whether like the person you want to reconcile with, if you can't because they're physically not here, or just they never get to that point, you can still like have a positive outcome.
Yeah, it's really good.
And so I think that's like the hope.
I mean, your aunt has even said like, it was crazy. The week you forgave your dad, it was a big week for you, like from a growth perspective. And she was looking at pictures online and she texted you, and or maybe it was just with me. And she was like, Danny is literally like visibly lighter.
Oh yeah.
Now you can just tell there's more joy there because you had just let that go. You had forgiven him.
Yeah. And so that's kind of all we can really, do right now with kind of the open-endedness,
which is hard when you're a person of action. It's really hard, but it's easy. I mean, we've tried everything under the sun. There's just nothing else to try.
Keep your heart
smoke signals
ready.
Will that work? Should we try?
Keep your heart ready and honestly not let any sort of like resentment or bitterness or those type of things kind of creep in. Just stay ready.
Groom your heart. There's another episode I did on this, just me. It's called Open Doors. It's all about this. And we're probably going to always touch on this because it's such a huge part of our story. It's grown me as a man. It's, you know, I would say this too is, you know, and I said this a little bit in the last episode around trust, just me on that one. But like early on in a marriage, I just can't express enough. Doing the right thing is protecting your marriage, even if you are 95% bought in on that thing. It doesn't have to be comfortable, but do you want to stay married so that you have another day to grow, another day to have a better conversation with your wife, another year to maybe be less angry in these conversations, another 2 years to just give yourself time to read a book, to give perspective? You can't win the war tonight, right now. I think it's the most important thing is to just stay in the fight. And I'm so glad that there were some really, really dark nights back in Seattle when we were clashing with my family. And I was like, we're not going to go to the event. My family is losing it on me, but I have to protect my new marriage. My wife is yelling at me. We had horrible communications back then. Horrible. And parts of me were dying off, and it was the most painful thing I've ever gone through, flat out. But I'm so glad that at the end of the day, I chose my marriage because we have a marriage. It's a blessing, and we have three beautiful kids, and like we're good.
Yeah, and we're also just setting boundaries for behaviors that will not be passed on.
I know.
And our kids will not be around.
Like we've learned so much in the process. Like we went into the church situation being like, teach us how to fix things with my family. Yeah. And 5 years later, we came out different people. It's not about me and my family anymore. It's about my entire worldview and all the issues I've uncovered in myself and all of that. And so now I look back on the family situation and I'm more like, I pity that. I pity some of the things I see. I yearn for a deeper relationship for them.
I
wish we had that. You know?
I always go back to the kids, and we've talked about this because they're starting, all these deacons starting to like ask questions and get older. And it's, you know, as long as we can stand before God and explain it and to be able to look into our kids and be like, these are behaviors that, you know, we're going to be a family that if you say something hurtful and someone asks you to apologize because you hurt them, you will say you are sorry.
And you will take it seriously.
And it won't be like, yeah, sorry. And then the next morning, like, we just move on. If you're still hurt on that, then you can keep talking about it. And it can be this like open and vulnerable thing. And if that means a lack of relationship with other people who don't subscribe to that standard, then they're more than welcome to have that in their family. But it will not be trickled down into ours.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really going to be a challenge for us when the kids start getting married and we're going to have differing views. We're going to feel like the kids are getting pulled from us and we're going to have to look at each other and be like, here's our test. Because we love our kids so much. But at the end of the day, I want to model the right things for my kids because that has a trickle-down effect generationally. And, you know, we just have three kids, but collectively they might have nine kids. And there's a trickle-down effect, and we can literally start changing the world for people who just own their crap and have more transparent conversations about these things and be real, you know?
Yeah, like just say you're sorry.
Say you're sorry, mean it, and ask yourself, why did I launch on them like that? What's going on in my soul? It's just not enough people willing to ask the questions.
Yeah, and then when you're on the receiving end of it, to just really just stay firm in what you believe in and what you and your spouse believe in, and just like reminding yourself of like the things that they're saying or because they're hurt or the things that they're saying are not your responsibility. You don't have to respond to everything.
Yeah, that's something I've learned as well. I definitely have a need to respond to pretty much everything, which is it's just the way I was raised, just how I'm wired, you know. I think this was really good. You feel like we left anything out that's big? I mean, we could probably talk for more hours on that because we've had years of this stuff. But do you think we're missing anything big?
Just explaining that so many people go through this, like probably 10 different couples that we've run into since Seattle, we've been able to just bond over this type of stuff.
And I would say this, that if you're in the middle of something, like you're in the middle of a conflict with this, with your family or her family or whatever, I would say this. If you don't deal with it now, it's just going to get worse.
I remember we talked about that.
But if you deal with it now, I promise it'll get bad. I can promise you it's going to be bad. But then day by day by day, it will get better.
But you have to
deal with it right now. The earlier, the better. It's just not something you can do 10 years in. I just don't know how that would even look. You've got to deal with it now.
You've
got to deal with it
It's all about just like people will treat you the way that you let them treat you. So if your like mother-in-law says a catty comment to you and you don't say anything about it, she will continue that.
Yeah. And there's little graces that we can give, right? But if there's a pattern, if you're genuinely being hurt and there's just not enough regard for how you feel, you need to go about it the right way. But you need to say, listen, I really don't appreciate the way you're communicating. It makes me feel this way, you know? And so start that conversation. And we're so with you. And by the way, I would also say this, that like, if you're in the middle of it, I just remember feeling so lonely and confused and angry.
Misunderstood.
And it was just the heart misunderstood. And just like, there's no such thing as a good decision right now. I just feel for you. And I just want you to know that it really can get better. Like, this darkness will not last. If you take the right steps, if you go and get with people who really love God, who want to help you, who are willing to be real with you, like, you can get out of this situation. This is not something you will be enslaved by forever. I promise you. But you have to stand up for yourself. You have to stand up for what you genuinely believe. And your marriage has to be your number one priority. There are enough divorces. There are enough broken families. It is worth fighting for your marriage. Families can break up and get back together and people can forgive, but marriage is sacred. Marriage is special. You've got to prioritize your marriage. I'm so glad we did.
All the fruit.
All the fruit, baby. Tropical fruits, kind of your humdrum Kroger fruits, the standard stuff, but some good stuff too.
Oh, the amount of money we spend at Kroger each week.
It's terrifying. Kids just continually eat. What's a fun thing we could end on?
Favorite food.
Favorite food. You have to guess my favorite food.
Your favorite food is just like a good burger.
Yeah, baby. Just a good bacon.
Yeah, all of egg. The things.
I want the runny egg on
I
there.
I don't make you have a gluten-free
jalapenos,
bun.
Real freaking bun. A real bun with waffle fries.
Not sweet potato.
On the salt. Sweet potato, LOL. LOL. I try to get excited about it. It doesn't work. Real fries, a real burger, bacon, jalapenos, egg, all the fixins, lettuce, tomato, onion, with a Diet Coke. No, an IPA. Let's get real. A nice IPA. What about you? God, this is so sad. You just want a chicken salad. you want a grilled, crispy chicken salad with ranch. But if there's like something fun about the ranch, you're like, oh yeah, baby. But it's not an avocado ranch.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be in.
And with, you know, tomatoes and all the stuff, but that's pretty much it. It's pretty basic. What to drink?
No, I'd say
water.
It's
you never even drink anything with your food. It like worries me.
Pretty
like,
much
are you
just
gonna
water.
Choke? We both eat very fast. Dinner's over in like 7 minutes.
Because there's usually someone just
no,
screaming
no,
at me.
No, we've always eaten super fast.
Yeah, it's either a salad or like milk chocolate malt balls by
the
dozen.
Those are bomb. You still want to get those tonight.
I do. That's why I keep looking at my phone to see what time.
All right, guys. We love you. We hope this was super helpful, and it's probably not our last episode. Thanks for listening in. It's all about getting better. It's all about having a better marriage and ultimately living a more purposeful life. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Saddled Stallion podcast. That's it, guys. Be strong, be humble, walk in purposeful manhood.